From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Claire Strempel with a local and statewide news update. Juneau police and family of a missing Juneau man say his body has been found. It's not clear yet how he died.
A hiker was doing their normal hike with their dog, and their dog ran up the hill above Flume, kind of by Gold Creek, and that's where he found the remains of my brother.
That's Kirsten Farnsworth. Doug Farnsworth is her brother. He's been missing since late September. A truck he'd been driving was found close to the Perseverance Trail near downtown Juneau. At first, there was a large search and rescue operation that included Alaska State Troopers, the Coast Guard, and a local canine group, but they found no trace of him. For the last month, ground searches were largely organized by family and friends. DNA identification will take some time, but when the hiker found the remains on Sunday afternoon, there was enough there to identify Doug Farnsworth, but not enough to make it immediately clear how he died.
They did find some bones in his clothes and a gun and a phone.
She says she got a call from Juneau police at about 8 p.m. on Sunday night. JPD's missing persons Facebook post was updated at 8:10 p.m. She says she barely had time to call everyone.
I mean, it took 3 days to make a post about him missing, but it took them hours to say that they found him.
Juneau police spokesperson Craig Campbell says he was told that the family had been notified and that people were already posting about it on social media when the department updated its post.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could have definitely waited a day, at least to get more family notified.
Kirsten Farnsworth lives in Arizona, but she and her brother were raised in Juneau. She said she's been inundated with messages and calls as news spreads that her brother has been found. Phone calls to family have been hard.
They're destroyed. They're pretty crushed. A lot of them are stuck in question as well. The question is what happened.
Now Farnsworth says she's working on getting the money to travel back to Juneau so they can lay him to rest. And she's looking for more information about the hiker so she can give them the $5,000 reward her family offered for information about Doug Farnsworth's disappearance. She's working on repurposing a Facebook group that's gathered nearly 800 members. She said she wants it to be a place where people can go to coordinate searches for other people who go missing in Juneau. State and federal wildlife authorities are proposing a 31-day wolf harvest on and around Prince of Wales Island. Conservationists have warned they could file a lawsuit saying the Alexander Archipelago wolf population is threatened. That conflicts with resident hunters who say the population is rising and preying on island deer, an important subsistence food source. Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Regional Wildlife Supervisor Tom Schumacher says the most recent fall population estimate is 386 wolves, much higher than previous counts. The Alaska Board of Game has set a population target of 150 to 200 wolves years ago, when the agency thought wolf numbers were much lower. He says a month-long trapping harvest likely won't reduce the population that far.
But given the uncertainty about whether that's an appropriate population objective, we feel that's a conservative and responsible way to go.
Environmental groups have threatened to sue the federal government to force Alexander Archipelago wolves to be listed under the Endangered Species Act. They've long argued that decades of clear-cut logging, not predators, are to blame for the island's dwindling deer herds. Shane Wolf, a conservation scientist with the Center for Biological Diversity, says her organization doubts the reliability of the population estimates, which are largely based on DNA sampling of wolf hair gathered in the field or turned over from previous harvests.
The agencies shouldn't open a trapping and hunting season on these vulnerable wolves when they're not generating reliable population estimates and ensuring that they're doing sustainable management.
But state game managers like Tom Schumacher say the shorter season should ensure there aren't too many taken this season. 2 years ago, he says there was a two-month season that resulted in 165 wolves reported taken.
There was a lot of effort that year. A lot of people who hadn't trapped previously trapped. We think that a one-month season will leave us with a lower level of harvests. And given the high population estimate the last 2 years, we're pretty convinced that that'll be result in a sustainable harvest.
Game managers are holding a public meeting and taking public testimony from 6 p.m. Tuesday to hear from members of the public over the proposed trapping season. An announcement on the trapping season is expected later this week, with trapping on and around Prince of Wales to run from November 15th through December 15th. One of the founders of America's largest seafood company, Trident, died last month. Chuck Bundrant started out as a deckhand on an Alaska crabbing boat in the 1960s and went on to become one of the most influential seafood executives in the world. KDLG's Izzy Ross has the story of how he changed the fishing industry and his connection to Bristol Bay.
Today, Seattle-based Trident Seafoods owns more than 40 vessels and operates plants in nearly a dozen Alaska communities. But Chuck Bundrant, the company's founder, didn't intend to make a living in the seafood industry when he got his first job as a deckhand. Here's Chuck's son, Joe, who has been Trident's chief executive since 2013.
He was pre-veterinary medicine down at Middle Tennessee State, and it's expensive.
Bundrant was 19 and wanted a job that would pay for his education. So in 1961, he drove from Indiana to Seattle, where he landed a deckhand job.
No, he never went back to college. Hardest working human being. I've met a lot of people in my life, a lot of really amazing people, but I have never met any human being on the planet that would outwork that man. Never.
Bundrant and two other fishermen founded Trident in 1973 with one boat, the 135-foot Billiken, which was the first Alaska vessel to catch, process, and freeze crab at sea.
They actually extracted all the meat from the shell, put it in 15-pound Long John containers, and we froze it.
Trident's first years coincided with the passage of the Magnuson-Stevens Act in 1976, which forced foreign fleets out of fisheries that extended 200 miles offshore. Bundrant's competitive nature and long-term view directed Trident's trajectory. In the 1980s, he took advantage of the Bering Sea's schools of pollock, not a popular fish in America at the time. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, in a floor speech last month, said Bundrant took risks on land to cement his investment in the whitefish.
He studied the Japanese methods for catching and processing pollock. He strategized about how Trident could enter this market. And then in 1981, he took a pretty bold move. He built a plant on a very remote Aleutian island, Accutane, for onshore processing of crab, salmon, and of course, pollock.
In one of his best-known business maneuvers, Bundrant struck deals with many of the country's leading fast food chains, like McDonald's, to switch their fish sandwiches from cod to pollock. As the chief executive of Trident, Bundrant was known for running a tight ship and emphasizing the importance of his employees. Here he is speaking in a 1989 video, which was shared during a celebration of life service.
I take more pride in having somebody that's been with me 10 years and 12 years and 15 years. They become like a family. This company, no matter what size it ever becomes, it's going to be still a close family. And that's the attitude that management's going to maintain, and that is the key to Trident's success, is its people.
Bundrant made lasting connections during his early years in Alaska, too. Penair founder Orrin Siebert remembers meeting Bundrant when he fished in Chignik.
Of course, he was just another fisherman, just a kid, actually, in those days. But over the years, he got into the crab business. Of course, a lot of my flying was supporting that crab industry.
In December of 1968, Siebert was flying a mail route when he crashed on an Aleutian island, injuring his leg and gashing his head. Bundrant was fishing nearby when word went out that Siebert and his passengers were stuck.
He heard about the problem, and he dropped his fishing, steamed into Palouf Harbor, picked us up. There was me, a doctor, and two nurses, four of us, and took us into Cold Bay, 40 miles away, but no other way to get there. So we've had a special relationship ever since that day.
Joe Bundrant said his father first came to Bristol Bay in 1979. Trident has a plant in Naknek. Since then, Chuck traveled to the region every summer, except for 2020. This summer, Bundrant took his last trip to the bay with his son and grandson, who fishes here now.
I knew my dad's health was, continuing to fade, and I told him, I don't care if I have to strap you on my back and carry you, Pops, we're going again. And he gave me two thumbs up, and back to Alaska we went. So Bristol Bay was one of our stops, and it's something that's just, it's part of my soul. So to be able to do this with my dad one more time was abundantly special to me.
Bundren served as the chair of the company's board until his death. Forbes magazine estimates he had a fortune worth at least $1.3 billion when he died. Bundren struggled with a degenerative disease for more than 10 years. He died at home in Edmonds, Washington. He was 79. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.